Money Show.
Make Money Mondays.
Make Money Mondays, personal edition. It's where we get well-known South Africans, and we say to them, tell us about money. Tell us about your attitude towards money. What informed your attitude towards money? Well, tonight, it's a great pleasure to have the founder and group chief executive for Discovery, Adrian Gore, in studio. I mean, today, you're well-known as somebody who's made a good living out of selling insurance. But did you grow up with money, or did you grow up in a particularly privileged house? You can tell us
here. I certainly grew up with privilege. My father was kind of a small entrepreneur, had ironically a cigarette.
No.
Yeah, really? I hate to admit it. A wholesale of cigarettes and sweets.
So that's what created Adrian Gore.
I remember packing 10,000 Lexington, you know. But we had a kind of a middle class privileged background in the apartheid era. So, you know, I didn't want for anything. But it was a very good time, I think, a very settled time.
Did you have to work for your pocket money?
No, I don't think I did. I think I had my parents were great believers in academics rather than business. So there was a constant, not academics for the sake of academics, mm-hmm. but a belief that life is about learning. You know, not necessarily business.
But they would have known that you were a dab hand with numbers fairly early on, I would think.
They did, but their view was that you must get a degree, you must pursue some kind of learning post school, and I don't think they weren't business. Even my father was
an entrepreneur, but not business.
He hated it. He told me, he said if he had his way, he would have been at university. In fact, he went back, I think, at 65, did an MBA, did archaeology, did astronomy, did a tour of the campus post. So he hated business. He didn't like it at all. My mother had a very strong kind of liberal mindset, didn't trust business. So interesting, I came from a fairly, diverse thinking background.
I mean, David Shapiro, who married into a family of communists, David's wife, Linda, families, mum and dad were under blooming arrest and held at the fort and done all sorts of things. And here's David Shapiro, flag bearer for capitalism, you know, and going Friday night supper must have been entertaining in that house. But you grow, and so your dad saw business as a means to an end to bring up a family, I suppose. And so you didn't have a great sort of business upbringing. You weren't having CEOs come to your home for dinner and that
definitely
sort of thing.
Not. Look, there was a lot of discussion about the business, about how we keep it sustainable, the issues going in and helping out. So I think I grew up in the context of business and how you make it work. But we were not a family that, I think science, and it was a very secular, scientific kind of environment. That's how I grew up.
Did you know that you wanted to run your own business, that you wanted to create something big one day?
I think I did have a real drive to create something. I think that was deep in me. But I think the context of business was around the table, you know, so it kind of was part of the narrative.
But that's so crucial for so many people growing up in South Africa who simply haven't come from a background where money is discussed, where business is discussed, or it's a burden, so you don't want to burden the kids. Where you had an environment which was safe, it was comfortable to talk about money, it was comfortable to talk about risks and opportunities, perhaps.
I think it was. Look, it wasn't easy. There were times the business got into difficulty, so we lived through those times. It wasn't easy, but I agree with you. I think that context is very helpful. I really believe that.
Do you give that context? Have you given that context to your kids?
I certainly have tried.
Dad's talking about work again.
Yeah, I actually don't get that. My kids have had a very good, we've been quite structured in that regard, and we've tried to give our kids a bigger sense of the geopolitical issues around what's going on and et cetera. So I think my kids, are well adjusted.
I hope.
I have faith in them.
Did you have a bank account as a kid?
I don't even recall. I think I did have a bank account.
You'd have to make your bank accounts more memorable than that.
Yeah, you know, I never found a bank that met our needs. So
he says punting his own when it comes. So going to the bank was never a big deal. You didn't have to sort of take a bag of change
Ironically, my dad was in a cash business, so we used to go to the bank with coins and notes and sit on the table there and count them out. I remember that vividly, you know, but I worked there a lot.
Mm.
So I had that. That was all in my upbringing, I think.
Did money excite you at an early age?
I don't think so. I don't think I've never been motivated by money per se. I haven't. I like impact, you know, the ability to build something of considerable impact. So money as a barometer of that, I think, is important. But money in and of itself, I'm not a trader. It's not in my nature, you know. I'm not a person who buys and sells, and it's not me.
When it came, though, to making a decision as to what sort of course you would choose, you could have done anything. You could have gone to medicine if you'd wanted to. You could have gone into science, I assume, if you'd wanted to. You chose actuarial science. You chose numbers. Why?
The choice for me was either engineering or it was applying mathematics either to engineering or to business. And I loved the idea of, I didn't actually know what it actually did in detail, but I kind of got the idea that it was an institutional, structured approach to business that you could have a significant impact. And I think in my early studies, when I saw the good power of an institution, that really inspired me.
And if you look at the power of mathematics in terms of almost deciphering an uncertain future. I mean, if you can create various scenarios with numbers, if this happens, then that. If that happens, then that happens. I mean, that is an incredibly powerful enabling tool.
It really is. I think mathematics is a gift. You don't have to be good at it, I'm saying to you. I think thinking about it and using it in the right way is, I think, a very powerful thing.
Doesn't it drive you mad when the Department of Basic Education is considering making maths voluntary?
I think it's worrying. I'm also worried how many people are told you're not good at maths. It is a terrible thing to do to a child. You know, I don't believe that. I think with the right encouragement, the right mentoring, people can get through it. How many people I see that tell me, I was never good at maths. I just don't believe it, you know. So I think beside kind of policies that may play down maths and science, I think kind of the coding that you're not good at is worse.
I mean, you built a business at Discovery over 25 years on the back of maths and science. I mean, those are the key disciplines. If one looks through the layers of people that you employ, these are people with mathematical and scientific brains, especially at the upper ends of the business.
I think so, but I must say, I hope that we've had a mix of thinking around philosophy,
sure,
politics, geopolitical events. I think it is a very broad base of people. So while it has been very mathematical, I think that we've been good at interpreting, you know, world events and issues that are very social and complex, and trying to build a country into something that really meets people's needs in a different way. So I agree with you. I guess that is how it went. My son is actually doing actuarial science, and I saw his textbook, it's full of formulae, and I said to him,
did you understand it?
I've forgotten a lot of it, to be frank. But,
Dad, I need help. Nope, sorry. No.
But I said to him, you know, we built Discovery on these formulae, you know. I mean, there's some truth in that. But I do think that you need a balance. You need liberal arts, you need thinking about philosophy. Mm-hmm. I think today you need a grounded view of the world to be successful.
My guest is Adrian Gore. We're sort of chewing the fat. No, who doesn't chew fat? Adrian Gore, we're chewing the ideas around building businesses. We're chewing around money and his experience of money and growing up in Johannesburg as a young person and getting a broad base of experience with a mother who didn't trust business and a father who didn't like it, becoming one of South Africa's most successful entrepreneurs, starting Discovery in 1992 as an individual sitting at a desk for 6 months before you made your first appointment. Was it longer?
I think longer. Close to
you. Is it true that you've still got a piece of paper on which you'd said to do? Hire an actuary. Is that true?
It is true. It's in my study. It's quite humbling when I read it, how productive I was in those days.
Well, what else is written on the list?
It's product, find, you know, start the systems process. It's really kind of probably 10 steps of the really big chapter headings, you know. It really is quite humbling to see it. But I still believe that approach of keeping a list and just, you know, making every day count.
In 25 years, he's grown a business worth nearly 100 billion rand on the JSE. Adrian Gore is my guest this evening and talking all about money.
The Money Show. Make Money Mondays.
Welcome to The Money Show. Adrian Gore is the founder and group chief executive of Discovery, former Reserve Bank governor, Tito Mboweni, on the line to us this evening. Also chairman of Discovery as well, if memory serves. Tito Mboweni, good evening to you.
Good evening, Chief. How are you doing?
Very good. How are you? Do you want to talk to Adrian Gore? Did he forget something at the office that he needs to remember?
Well, Adrian Gore is terrible. He always gives me grass for lunch.
Wheatgrass, I hope. Something healthy, antioxidants and stuff. Yes.
Very, very healthy, conscious person. But, you know, there's a thing that you guys are not talking about tonight, which I think you should.
Mm-hmm.
The disruptive model that Adrian has introduced to South African business. Disruptive means to do something different, but something that eventually leads to further growth and further growth. And when he recruited me to the board of directors of Discovery, he explained to me that there is a disruptive model. It's a behavioral model in economics. So you change this and you do that and people behave like this and that. That is the key thing. And then we have made now an application to the South African Reserve Bank to start a Discovery Bank, which will be a disruptive bank. Not disrupting the financial system, but disruptive in the way in which we are going to invite clients. So I'm enjoying your conversation. Sorry, Adrian, for
stepping up. Bye. Tito Mboweni, former governor of the Reserve Bank, also on the board of Discovery. And now he's just given us another clue about Discovery Bank, so we've got that now. We're trying to piece it. When are you launching the bank? When are you disrupting the banking model as we know it in South Africa?
Well, we're in the process with the, you know, the
You've been in the process for 2 years.
Yeah, I know. It's a long process. And you have to wait for the regulatory sure. process. So subject to approval, I think end of Q1 2018. So probably... No, 8-9 months away. All goes well.
Okay.
That's the idea.
We watch the space. When did you make your first investment? I mean, I think, you know, your investment has been heart and soul in Discovery for the last quarter of a century. I don't mean to make you feel old or anything, but I mean, as a young man, you're 28, 29 years old, working at Liberty. You went across to First Rand and Laurie Dippenaar, who is, he comes to life when he talks about his projects that he started. And he's like a proud dad with kids almost. Like, yeah, we found this guy. He wanted to do this. We had some capital. We gave it to him and off he went and did it. And we got rich as a result. It's brilliant. Did you ever have a separate investment portfolio or did you pull
everything? No, I did.
Everything?
I did. As a young actuarial student at Liberty, we traded shares and I lived through the 87 crash. That was our height. We were all making endless amounts of money on paper, of course, until all came crumbling down. And in fact, I got married December 87. I lost everything prior to that. Yeah, I forget, was it October 87?
October 87,
So we all had our list of shares on the table. We never knew in those days things can go down, not necessarily up, you know. And we thought we were smart. So we traded and, you know, everyone had their own story, but it all came crashing down. So it's good to live through a crash. You're kind of growing neurons.
But that's the trouble, is that certainly the world hasn't seen any significant pullback since 2008. And there is a generation of people growing up in markets who, like
it.
You at that time, don't believe that anything can go down.
Yeah. I think it's a good...
What did that teach you?
I think humility. I think it taught me things do go down. And when things are too good to be true, they usually are. And bubbles, you need to be aware. I'm skeptical of any of these, you know. It's a new economic model. Things have changed forever. You know what I'm
saying?
This time it's different. You know, I'm actually a contrarian, so I'm, you know. But in truth, I think going through that is important. I'm also, as I said, I'm not an investor and a trader in that regard.
Does Adrian Gore have a retirement annuity?
Actually, I do.
Do
you? I do. I took our maximum investment on our retirement funding in the office.
That keeps the people running it sharp. It keeps the guys in Investec Asset Management sharp.
I'm not sure what I've done, but I've built up. It's taught me the power of compound interest. I've built up a big nest egg after 25 years of funding it. So I'm a believer in that. I'm not a great risk taker with money. I'm really not. I believe in careful thought about how you save.
I mean, there were times where Discovery looked shaky. I remember Discovery at R6 a share. I think you went up to 30 and then you went all the way down to 6, if memory serves. This is about 15 or 16 years ago. It was go, 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 go. And then suddenly regulators started tightening up and started challenging the business model of Discovery. And it looked a bit wobbly at one point. Did you think it was ever going to go pear-shaped?
No, it was never wobbly. It looked wobbly at the share price, but the business was remarkably strong. I think we've been very careful in how we built the business. I think we've never taken really risky positions. I think the stuff that we've done, even in new initiatives, have been around the idea that if it fails in some way, it doesn't pose a risk, you know, any systemic risk to the organization. So I think we've been very careful.
But critically, you've also been very good at admitting when mistakes have been made. Destiny Health in the United States, you got to a point, I think it was R1 billion. You went, we can't keep throwing money there. Leave Vitality there. It'll have a purpose in the future, and it's proving that, tying it to other health schemes. And then going into China with Ping An, biggest insurer in the world, going to the UK, taking physical stakes in companies there. But again, small bites.
Yeah, I think that's right. You know, we've made a lot of mistakes. I think that's just inevitable. But I don't think you should ever bet the house, you know, whether it's in a personal capacity or in a business, especially an institutional business that has a very strong fiduciary duty. So, yeah, I agree with that. I think we have made mistakes. But I think building something organically requires that kind of mindset, you know, incremental. And to build off the base that you've got, you know, don't kind of...
Does the same work in terms of personal finances? I mean, your personal finances are different to most other people in the world. So, I mean, that you've got a nice, decent slug of Discovery. Your family will be fine no matter what happens. But when it comes to personal finances, incremental, cautious?
I think I've been incremental and cautious, but I've taken positions in Discovery as we've raised capital. Mm. And given the scale of the organization, that's been often
significant. Yeah?
Significant. So I have done it. But I generally believe in being cautious. I believe in the long... You know, in the long game, very strongly with finances. So,
do you have any extravagances?
No, I do. I do have plenty of extravagances because I'm actually physically fairly reckless. I'm financially conservative, but I enjoy speed. I enjoy those kinds of things. I prefer that than people who are financially reckless and physically nerdy.
So but how does that affect your diamond status when you fill in the forms and it says, do you like to drive cars fast? Well, yes.
Yeah. It is a...
Extra 2 hours of gym gets you back to diamond.
Yeah. But I do enjoy that. I think you do have to have passions in life. I think life is boring if you don't have them. Absolutely.
Have you ever wasted money? Have you ever looked at something and gone, that was a bad money decision?
I've wasted... I mean... I enjoy cars. They're always a waste of money. Always. you know, I just know it going in. You know, I'm under no illusion. I think I've wasted a considerable amount of money. But I do think you have to live. I think you have to live and enjoy life. I think it is short. You have to enjoy it. Not be extravagant. I think there's a value in being a minimalist, not having too many assets.
Sure.
But I think there is a virtue in enjoying it, having interests. And I think I don't think money for the sake of it. I think it's a pretty puerile position to take. I think it's got to mean something, the things that you do and the impact that you have.
What gives you meaning when it comes to money?
I hope it doesn't sound trite. I think giving it away to the right causes is the most profound thing you can do.
It's how Bill Gates and Warren Buffett find their meaning.
I think spending on yourself is a counterfeit. Doesn't bring you much. I mean, you obviously have the essentials and education and that. But I think that if you see impact around you, you can do that. I think that is the most profound use of money.
Adrian Gore, founder, chief executive of Discovery, thank you for giving us half an hour of your time, very valuable time, and coming to share insights about money. It's really good to see you. Thank you.
Thank you.